This morning's scripture reading will be found in Matthew 24, 4 through 7. And Jesus answered and said unto them, Take heed that no man deceive you, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. And ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass. But the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places.
Thank you, designated reader. Good morning to you all. What an interesting week I've had. Let me go over it a little bit. We hosted the teen study, which was a joy. If you all would have seen that room that you were in a week before, you would have been scared. It was carpetless, no cabinet doors, no front door. Well, it had a front door, but it let in all the cold air. And so thank you for having that study, because my wife got a room done finally. I took working rapidly and cutting corners literally when I cut off the corner of my finger on the table saw. I like to bring in my family when I'm speaking up here, so I'm going to bring them in just a couple of things here, which I've already done with my wife. The next one would be Ashton. You're familiar with this because I think this one put you in the hospital. I caught my foot on something coming down the stairs last night and hit my head on the ceiling, which is really kind of cool, except for it's a low ceiling. I don't really know what has happened with it, other than the fact that I have a huge red mark on my head. And when I was writing and when I was typing, oh, three or four times every sentence, I would start on the second letter. Is that a problem, nurses and doctors out there? It's kind of scary. So I'm not trying to make an excuse for something strange that I may say up here, but I am feeling just a little odder than usual. Teresa and I have been doing this Farrell's Extreme Body Shaping, and we hosted that party last night, the final party. So that was a little bit of stress added on to all the activities of this week. And it's, well, again, now to quote Allison, wah, you know, poor me. So I finished this about 5:30 this morning. Now, there's no excuse for that other than the one I'm going to give in just a little bit. However, because of my lack of sleep and because of my head injury, you don't get to fall asleep while I'm giving this morning, but I might, so just be careful. I'm going to start out talking just a little bit about fear. You know, we may have different fears. Some of us are scared to speak in public places, which I don't think I've ever gotten over, or trying to type without one of your main fingers is another fear. A lot of people are scared of the dark. Spiders, snakes, the IRS seems to get a lot of people. Y2K, remember that one? That was huge. I had to work overtime. I think I've told you that. I stayed there right, of course, up till midnight when everything flopped and you know, computers didn't crash and airplanes didn't fall out of the sky. That was a good thing. But I've been hearing some talk amongst people that are dear to me of something that I'm afraid that some of them are afraid of themselves, and I'm not sure that it's something that they need to be afraid of, and I'm hearing it just a little too often. So I'm kind of entitling this, Is This the End? And this is the real reason that I was up to 5:30 this morning. Here's your excuse. When you're going to speak about something, sometimes you're going to be surprised how little you really know about the subject. When I would get a little information, I'm like, you know, I can't use that information unless I verify this information. And then I would come up with new questions, and it just built and built and built and built. And you'll be thankful to know that I didn't take all the information, because I promise you we'd be here until well after 6 o'clock tonight. So that's what took so long, was actually trying to edit out everything that I had learned and trying to make it into something that will be useful to everybody here this morning. To quote my favorite Three Amigos quote from that movie way back when, there was a plethora of information. So I bit off more than I could chew. My closing prayer as I was falling asleep this morning was to ask God that I would be able to present this to you. And I'm not a real big dream believer, and you know, I don't blame people if they have bad dreams, and I don't think that people have thoughts placed in their head, but my waking thought this morning, this is really weird, I've never had this one yet, was that I was dead and that I was arising and going to heaven. And I'm just going to take that as a sign that maybe this will be good for you and that God will help me stuttering this morning trying to get this out. I want you to think about this date. Does this have any significance to anyone out there? December 21st, 2012. Okay, it looks really neat when you write it down, right? It's 12-21-12. That's the day the world's going to end, according to Mayan calendars. This culture, the Mayans, they were star charters. They were known for many wonderful things, mathematical, scientific, artistic, architectural wizards. It was a fantastic culture. And they took a lot of time, apparently, in coming up with this date where the world's going to end. So do we need to worry about that? One of the things I found out was that Mel Gibson, Janine Garofalo, I don't know how to pronounce her name, Montel Williams and Shirley MacLaine, they all believe it. So to make this a short sermon, are we near the end of the earth? I could say no, maybe. And then just let it go. Matthew 24:36, speaking about Christ coming, Jesus says, "But concerning that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, only the Father." And of course, shortly after John writes the Revelation, in about 96 AD or so, all the predictions start coming. I have a bunch of them. I'm going to read them as quickly as I can. This is kind of interesting. AD 247, I'm just going to read them. Let me back up. The information that I'm getting here, I don't think there's any way that's possible for me to verify it, but the website that I was reading on, they have a really cool, official-sounding, intelligent name. I hope they're accurate. If there's anything that's completely wrong, I apologize. I'm just going off someone else's information. In AD 247, Christian prophets declared that the persecution by the Romans are a sign of the impending return of Jesus. In AD 410... when Rome was sacked, some proclaimed, behold, from Adam all the years have passed. All the years have passed now. And behold, the 6,000 years were completed. This alludes to the great week theory held by the millennialists that the God allowed a town of man on man on earth. Man's time on earth was 6,000 years, then followed by the 1,000 years of peace under the earthly reign of Christ. In AD 1000, and now do you think, you know, we kind of wigged out and when we were coming up in 2000, I'm sure that they had the same problems. Christian authority all over the world predicted that the second coming was going to come in that year, 1000. Then in AD 1033, when the world didn't end, the same authorities claimed they had forgotten what? 33 years later, they forgot to add the life of Christ, and they revised that prediction to 1033. During that time, apparently, according to writings, there was mass hysteria in the world. Hysteria in the world. In AD 1284, Pope Innocent III predicted the end of the world in the year 1284, which was 666 years, there's another big important number, after the founding of Islam. In 1500, Martin Luther, the Protestant reformer, stated his quote, "I persuade myself verily that the day of judgment will not be absent for full 300 years. God will not, cannot, suffer this world longer, much longer. The great day is drawing near in which the kingdom of abominations shall be overthrown." 32 years later, Michael Stifel, a mathematician and a follower of Martin Luther, published Apocalypse on the Apocalypse, a little book of arithmetic about the Antichrist, which computed the day of judgment for 8 a.m., October 9th, 1533. 33 years after Martin Luther had made his prediction. That, of course, didn't happen. In 1688, John Napier, a mathematician who discovered logarithms, applied his new mathematics to the revelation and predicts the end of the world for 1688, and when that goes by, he tries again for 1697. Now, some of these people, I actually have a little respect for their intellect, at least from what I know of them in history. For example, Sir Isaac Newton, I think we've heard of him, the great scientist developed a carefully constructed scenario that predicted the Jews would return to reclaim Jerusalem in 1899 and that the second coming of Christ would occur precisely 49 years later. That's gone by. Mormon leader Joseph Smith prophesied under divine revelation that the gathering of the saints at the coming of New Jerusalem and the temple which would be built in Missouri and reared in this generation, he says that pestilence, hail, famine, and earthquake will sweep the wicked of this generation from off the face of the earth. They open and prepare the way for the return of the lost tribes of Israel from the north country. There are those now living upon the earth whose eyes shall not be closed in death until they all see these things which I have spoken fulfilled. That was in 1832. It goes on and on. Getting a little more modern. In 1976, a prophecy teacher named Doug Clark, and I didn't even know this, perhaps some of you know, had heard this, he announced that Jimmy Carter would be the president who would meet Mr. 666, the Antichrist. A flyer announcing Clark's new book that year proclaimed the death of the United States and the birth of one world government under President Carter. I was 11, I wouldn't have paid any attention to that. But a TV station in Orange County, California, had a manager who believed him so much that he transformed the station's output into a 24-hour-a-day into the Earth Watch, even to the point of abandoning commercials. The Earth didn't end, but the TV station, it went out of business. In AD 1993, on a sadder note, David Koresh, the self-proclaimed little lamb of Isaiah 16 and the second coming of Christ, died in a fire with 80 of his followers. All in all, I was able to find well over 200 accurate predictions to the end of the world. I found some additional American history facts that I thought were kind of interesting. In early America, a gentleman named Cotton Mather was convinced of the devil's presence and predicted the end of the world in 1691, and then he continued to pick out new dates as they passed by. In early America, earthquakes, storms, lost ships, these all fueled predictions. Some early Americans called natives, the Native Americans, the Antichrist. I had never heard that. When America wanted independence, what I read was that some had a new identity for the Antichrist, and that was King George III. That's kind of convenient. In 1830s, a farmer preacher from New York, William Miller, he was convinced that the world would end in 1843, and he traveled and spread his word. These Millerites caused a huge frenzy in 1843 when that date passed. The more accurate prediction then was October 22nd of 1844. Hundreds of people sold everything they had, gathered on his farm, sang praises to God, said their prayers. However, as the day ended, it was very sorrowful. Out of these Millerites, have you ever heard of them? Out of that group was the Seventh-day Adventist Church. That's where they were born. However, apparently now they avoid date setting. Again, sad notes. 1978. 900 commit suicide as Jim Jones convinces them that the end of the world is here. In 1997, the Heaven's Gate people, the ones that were going to die and join the spaceship that was behind the Hale-Bopp comet, 39 people commit suicide for that person, their leader. Have you ever stopped and thought about those numbers? I mean, seriously, we gather 60 to 80 people here. This is our group. It's just horrifying. Now, one thing that I think they had in common, though they were undoubtedly, some of them were very smart people, I'm here to tell you, they were all nuts. Did I bore you with history yet? Let's move on. Since the death of Jesus, there's been quite a bit of talk, perhaps a little bit of fear, of when the end of the world is coming. I have one guarantee for you how it won't come. And that, of course, is the promise made in Genesis 9:11. I will establish my covenant with you. Neither shall all flesh be cut off any more by the waters of the flood. Neither shall there any more be a flood to destroy the earth. So it's not going to be by water. How will the earth end? And will it end? A pandemic? war, moral decay? I don't know. The answer I have for you is the how. We say it's going to be by fire. When? I'm not going to answer that this morning, quite obviously. Several of the predictions that were made earlier were based upon the interpretations of the sixth chapter of the Revelation. I find the Revelation as a book itself to be very intimidating. I'm not going to go into great detail to try to interpret it or explain it. But in that chapter, we are introduced to what many people in the world call the four horsemen. I'll read that to you quickly. Revelation 6 and beginning in verse 1. As I watched, the Lamb broke the first of the seven seals on the scroll. Then I heard one of the four living beings say with a voice like thunder, "Come." I looked and saw a white horse standing there. Its rider carried a bow, and a crown was placed on his head. He rode out to win many battles and gain the victory. When the Lamb broke the second seal, I heard the second living being say, "Come." Then another horse appeared, a red one. Its rider was given a mighty sword and the authority to take peace from the earth. And there was war and slaughter everywhere. When the Lamb broke the third seal, I heard the third living being say, "Come." I looked and saw a black horse. Its rider was holding a pair of scales in his hand. And I heard a voice from among the four living beings say, "A loaf of wheat bread or three loaves of barley will cost a day's pay. And don't waste the olive oil and wine." When the Lamb broke the fourth seal, I heard the fourth living being say, "Come." I looked and saw a horse whose color was pale green, according to this Bible's interpretation. Its rider was named Death. His companion was the grave. These two were given authority over a fourth of the earth to kill with a sword and famine and disease and wild animals. Now many people call these four horsemen this. The white is war. The red is pestilence or plague. Black is famine or hunger. And pale is death. I want you to note, though, and I'm not going to argue about this one way or the other, that the only one that is actually named in there is death. As people notice these circumstances happening in their lives, war, plague, famine, death, many times this is what causes the people to turn to these predictions. So we talk about that a lot in our media, the moral decay of the country, the threat of war that we have, the famine that we hear about throughout the world. 9-1-1 conspiracies are still rampant. The rise of Islam, disease. Is this new? We talk, it's getting a little in the past now, but AIDS was a huge new disease. It was a sign of the coming of the Christ. Bird flu is something new. What about the plague? 1347, right? Flea-ridden rats spread the bubonic plague from China to Europe and the rest of the world. It killed 25 to 50 million people in Europe alone and 75 million people worldwide. A gentleman in 1348 named, I don't speak this language, Agnolo de Tura, writing in the time of the Black Death, he wrote, "I buried my five children with my own hands, and so did many others likewise, and wept. And nobody wept, no matter what is lost, because almost everyone expected death. People said and believed, this is the end of the world." There are many examples like this. I'm not going to go through all of them this morning. But there's nothing new here, except for one thing that I wanted to mention. This might be where the nursery rhyme, Ring Around the Rosies, came from, this particular disease. If you kids, if you want more information, you can talk to me or your parents. And if you kids haven't heard that little nursery rhyme, you need to chastise your parents. That's a good one. Okay, war and disease. In 1918, Clarence Larkin, in his book, The Dispensational Truth, wrote this. 1918, guys. "At no time in the history of the Christian church have the conditions necessary to the Lord's return been so completely fulfilled at the present time. Therefore, his death is imminent. His coming is imminent and will not probably be long delayed. If the millennium is to be ushered in AD 2000, then the rapture must take place at least 7 years before that. It may have been 4,075 years instead of 4,004 from Adam to Christ." This is his quote. "In that case, we are living in the year 5,999 from the creation 93 from the creation of Adam or on the eve of the rapture? A, I can't find the rapture mentioned in the Bible, so I really don't know what he's talking about. B, thinking that 7 years before that 2000 was 1993, I'm still here. What conditions could he have been talking about? My assumption is World War I and the flu epidemic. Again, that flu pandemic in 1918, 1919, killed between 20 and 40 million people worldwide. It was huge. More people died of the flu in that single year than in the 4 years of the bubonic plague. 675,000 Americans died of it. More of the soldiers in Europe died from the flu than they did from other injuries in the war. So, this prediction then being more modern, does that mean that he's smarter than these old people? These people that the prophets of old? You know, we're talking about war and disease here. It's nothing new. But we're hearing it all the time now. The talk of the next flu, the next war, the next great nation or the religion indicating the apocalypse, it's been covered already many times before we or any of our brothers ever thought about it. Don't assume that because we're in our generation now that we're a lot smarter than all these people were before. Because don't you think that they had the same thoughts when they were going through all these predictions, that they had finally gotten it right? It boils down to this. In Matthew chapter 24, I'm going to start reading in verse 3. As he was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, "Tell us, when will these things happen, and that will be the sign of your coming, the end of the age?" And Jesus answered and said to them, "See to it that no one misleads you." Here are the signs. In verse 5, "For many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ." Remember David Koresh? "And many will mislead. You will be hearing of wars, rumors of wars. See that you're not frightened, for these things must take place, but that is not yet the end. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. In various places there will be famines and earthquakes, but all these things are merely the beginning of birth pangs," or the New King James says sorrows. Sound familiar to what you hear? "They will deliver you to tribulation and will kill you. You'll be hated by all nations because of my name. At that time, many will fall away and betray one another and hate one another. Many false prophets will arise and will mislead many. Because lawlessness is increased, most people's love will grow cold. But the one who endures to the end, he'll be saved. The gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all the nations. And then the end will come." Again, does this sound familiar to not only what we're hearing today, but to what we've heard to a lot of these way in the past? I'm skipping to verse 23, the false prophets. "Then if anyone says to you, behold, here is the Christ, or there he is, don't believe him. For false Christs and false prophets will arise and will show great signs and wonders so as to mislead, if possible, even the elect. Behold, I have told you in advance, so that if they say, behold, he's in the wilderness, don't go out. Or behold, he is in the inner rooms, do not believe them. For just as lightning comes from the east and flashes even to the west, so will the coming of the Lord, Son of Man, be." If you are knowing who I'm speaking of, don't think that I am calling the people dear to you the devil. But don't listen to these people, no matter how dear they are to you, or how beautiful they seem to you, because the answer is, we don't know. We don't know when it's going to end. So why are we trying to pin it down? Verse 35 of Matthew 24, "Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. But of that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father alone." In verse 42, "Therefore be on the alert, for you do not know which day your Lord is coming. But be sure of this, that if the head of the house had known at what time of the night the thief was coming, he would have been on alert and would not have allowed his house to be broken into. For this reason you must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming in an hour when you do not think he will." Seriously, wouldn't it be easy for all the sinners to repent if we knew when it was going to be? Would that be fair? No. I was going to read a little more. We're at 11:30. I'm going to come to the conclusion of this. And what I have is that these predictions of the imminent world, end of the world, have been made forever as far as we're concerned. Don't fret about these modern prophets or these modern people who say they're Christ or God. Their predictions will likely go down in history as wasted words, just as the rest of them were. When I say likely, it's because somebody's eventually going to get it right. But that's not what's important. Because shouldn't we welcome the end of the world as we know it anyway? Because isn't that why we're all here? We're here because we love God. We believe Christ was the Son of God. We want a home in heaven. This is a great place here. None of us should fear leaving it. We've got a better promise beyond here. So isn't that what we want, the time of our journey to heaven? We should welcome any signs of Jesus returning. So again, is this the end? The answer is I don't know, but we better be prepared. This is the first time I heard this sermon too. So I had no idea where it would go. I hope it was beneficial for you. Naturally, the real point that I want to make is that you should always be ready, whether it's today, thousands and thousands of years in the future. You don't want to be one of those people that's left behind. Give you the opportunity this morning to come forward and confess your sins before God, to join the church, to be baptized. If you're a church member who's fallen away, has something they need to confess, we can do that now as we stand and sing the invitation song.